and that I should also attain the fulfilment of other wishes. Asking for the way is again a direct allusion to Rome, for of course all roads lead to Rome. Moreover, the name Zucker, English sugar, again points to Carlsbad, whither we send all persons afflicted with the constitutional disease, diabetes, Zuckerkrankheit, sugar disease. The occasion for this dream was the proposal of my Berlin friend that we should meet in Prague at Easter. A further allusion to sugar and diabetes was to be found in the matters which I had to talk over with him. A fourth dream, occurring shortly after the last one mentioned, brings me back to Rome. I see a street corner before me, and am astonished to see so many German placards posted there. On the day before I had written my friend with prophetic vision that Prague would probably not be a comfortable resort for German travellers. The dream therefore simultaneously expressed the wish to meet him at Rome instead of at the Bohemian city, and a desire which probably originated during my student days that the German language might be accorded more tolerance in Prague. Besides, I must have understood the Czech language in the first 3 years of my childhood, because I was born in a small village of Moravia inhabited by Slavs. A Czech nursery rhyme, which I heard in my 17th year, became, without effort on my part, so imprinted upon my memory that I can repeat it to this day, although I have no idea of its meaning. There is then no lack in these dreams also of manifold relations to impressions from the first years of my life. It was during my last journey to Italy, which, among other places, took me past Lake Trasiminus, that I at last found what reinforcement my longing for the Eternal City had received from the impressions of my youth. This was after I had seen the Tiber, and had turned back with painful emotions when I was within 80 kilometres of Rome. I was just broaching the plan of travelling to Naples via Rome the next year, when this sentence, which I must have read in one of our classical authors, occurred to me. It is a question which of the two paced up and down in his room the more impatiently after he had made the plan to go to Rome. Assistant Headmaster Winckelmann, or the great General Hannibal? I myself had walked in Hannibal's footsteps. Like him, I was destined never to see Rome, and he too had gone to Campania after the whole world had expected him in Rome. Hannibal, with whom I had reached this point of similarity, had been my favourite hero during my years at the gymnasium. Like so many boys of my age, I bestowed my sympathies during the Punic War not on the Romans, but on the Carthaginians. Then, when I came finally to understand the consequences of belonging to an alien race, and was forced by the anti-Semitic sentiment among my classmates to assume a definite attitude, the figure of the Semitic commander assumed still greater proportions in my eyes. Hannibal and Rome symbolized for me as a youth the antithesis between the tenaciousness of the Jews and the organization of the Catholic Church. The significance for our emotional life, which the anti-Semitic movement has since assumed, helped to fix the thoughts and impressions of that earlier time. Thus the wish to get to Rome has become the cover and symbol in my dream life for several warmly cherished wishes, for the realization of which one might work with the perseverance and single-mindedness of the Punic general, and whose fulfilment sometimes seems as little favoured by fortune as the wish of Hannibal's life to enter Rome. And now, for the first time, I happen upon the youthful experience which, even today, still manifests its power in all these emotions and dreams. I may have been 10 or 12 years old when my father began to take me with him on his walks, and to reveal to me his views about the things of this world in his conversation. In this way he once told me, in order to show into how much better times I had been born than he, the following. "While I was a young man, I was walking one Saturday on a street in the village where you were born. I was handsomely dressed and wore a new fur cap. Along comes a Christian, who knocks my cap into the mud with one blow and shouts, 'Jew, get off the sidewalk!' 'And what did you do?' 'I went into the street and picked up the cap,' was the calm answer. That did not seem heroic on the part of the big, strong man who was leading me, a little fellow, by the hand. I contrasted this situation, which did not please me, with another more in harmony with my feelings. The scene in which Hannibal's father, Hamilcar Barca, made his boy swear at the domestic altar to take vengeance on the Romans. Since that time Hannibal has had a place in my fantasies. I think I can follow my enthusiasm for the Carthaginian general still further back into my childhood, so that possibly we have here the transference of an already formed emotional relation to a new vehicle. One of the first books which fell into my childish hands after I learned to read was Tiers Consulat und Kaiserreich, Consulship and Empire. I remember I pasted on the flat backs of my wooden soldiers little labels with the names of the imperial marshals, and that at that time Massena, as a Jew Manasse, was already my avowed favourite. Napoleon himself follows Hannibal in crossing the Alps, and perhaps the development of this martial ideal can be traced still further back into my childhood, to the wish which the now friendly, now hostile intercourse during my first 3 years with a boy a year older than myself must have actuated in the weaker of the two playmates. The deeper one goes in the analysis of dreams, the more often one is put on the track of childish experiences which play the part of dream sources in the latent dream content. We have learned that the dream very rarely reproduces experiences in such a manner that they constitute the sole manifest dream content unabridged and unchanged. Still, some authentic examples showing this process have been reported, and I can add some new ones which again refer to infantile scenes. In the case of one of my patients, a dream once gave a barely disfigured reproduction of a sexual occurrence which was immediately recognized as an accurate recollection. The memory of it, indeed, had never been lost in waking life, but it had been greatly obscured, and its revivification was a result of the preceding work of analysis. The dreamer had, at the age of 12, visited a bedridden schoolmate, who had exposed himself by a movement in bed, probably only by chance. At the sight of the genitals, he was seized by a kind of compulsion, exposed himself, and took hold of the member belonging to the other boy, who, however, looked at him with surprise and indignation, whereupon he became embarrassed and let go. A dream repeated this scene 23 years later, with all the details of the emotions occurring in it, changing it, however, in this respect, that the dreamer took the passive part instead of the active one, while the person of the schoolmate was replaced by one belonging to the present. As a rule, of course, a childhood scene is represented in the manifest dream content only by an illusion, and must be extricated from the dream by means of interpretation. The citation of examples of this kind cannot have a very convincing effect, because every guarantee that they are experiences of childhood is lacking.